The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 51. Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is The Rebel Capitalist Show. All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to bring someone to the Rebel Capitalist Show. It's a good buddy of mine. He's a fellow YouTuber, so make sure you support his stuff. His name is Mark Moss. Mark, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Yeah, thanks so much, George. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I can't wait.
Yeah, now for those of my viewers who don't really know your backstory, can you help us understand that better?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a super fast version of it because I'm old and it goes long. So when I was in 1995, when I was 18 years old, I started buying real estate from the bank, zero down, started fixing, flipping real estate, didn't know what I was doing. The late 90s, I was trading these internet stocks. My roommate quit his job and we're day traders. And then the market crashed and I didn't really know what I was doing. I thought it'd be a good time to jump into the technology space, and I started an internet business at the bottom at 2001. Huh. Did great, Fortune 500 exit on that, continued with real estate, basically multiple businesses that did great, sold them, continued with real estate, and I piled everything in, and in 2008, it ended really, really bad for me.
Okay.
It didn't go good. I built up about a $20 million portfolio, and by 2008, I saw it disappear. That sucked. And at that point, you know, most people want to give up. And I just said, I got to figure this thing out. Like, I was pretty good at making money, but I don't understand this financial, just, I don't understand this casino game. Like, what the heck happened? Right. And I learned a concept. I had just gotten married. I just had my first kid and I was 30 years old, retired. I was on top of the world. And next thing you know, I'm millions of dollars in debt. And I committed to my family, to myself, that this would never happen to me again. Yeah. And so I committed at that point to figure this thing out. And I started learning as much as I could, investing into financial research newsletters, not books. The books don't have the information, newsletters. And I started learning all these different things. And I learned a concept that's money is like energy. It doesn't disappear, it transfers.
Right.
And so when I lost all my wealth in 2008, someone else got it. Mm. And that kind of made me angry. And I decided that I wanted to be on the receiving end of the wealth transfer next time. So I've spent the last now 12 years digging in as deep as you can into this financial casino, figuring it out. Really went deep into the gold, kind of a gold bug back in 2008 and sound money, economic principles, all that. Being a technology guy as well, it led me to become, being a gold guy and a technology guy, I got into Bitcoin very early. And so I got into Bitcoin about 2014, and I started writing a newsletter, started basically informing people how to think about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, et cetera. And about a year and a half ago, I started a YouTube channel because people wanted to hear more from me. And man, here we are talking to you right now. It's been quite a whirlwind.
To be clear, back in 2008, you had a $20 million portfolio. It was all real estate, and that's how you lost quite a bit.
In 1995, I started with a zero down VA repo for $80,000. I made 30 grand on that deal and I rolled it and rolled it and rolled it. And 10 years later, I was sitting on a $20 million portfolio.
Okay. Yeah.
Which sounds really great. And I'm not here to brag because it ended badly. Right. We either win or we learn. And at that point I chose to learn and I learned a whole lot and it's changed my whole life. And that's why I started the YouTube channel, is because I don't want people to make the same mistake that I made. And I need them to know what I wish I would have known back then.
Yeah. Which is, what's the key mistake that you made? Just if you could kind of give us the elevator pitch of what mistake it was and what you learned as a result.
Yeah. I mean, it's super simple and it sounds stupid when I repeat it back to you, but it's don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? So I had everything in real estate and I had sold two different companies, like I told you, even a Fortune 500 company, but all that money went back into real estate. Mm-hmm. And I had a huge rental empire and I started selling my rental properties because I was doing development and I had this $12 million project that I was in. And, you know, so I just doubled, tripled down and I was just all in. And yeah. I mean, that's what did it to me. Right. And so that's it in a nutshell. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, right? Asset allocation, right? So, understanding leverage. Leverage is like a fire. It can keep you warm or it can burn your whole house down. And so you need to understand leverage. So anyway, asset allocation is the number one thing.
Yeah. So going back to having all your eggs in one basket, that when you said that, it really reminded me of a lot of the conversations that I have with people in the comments of my YouTube videos or on Twitter, where they say, George, listen, if you're bullish on gold over the long term or Bitcoin, why don't you just go all in? Why don't you take 100% of whatever you have and just buy gold if you are very confident that it's going to $5,000 an ounce, or same thing with Bitcoin. If you're confident it's going to $100,000 an ounce, why don't you just go all in? How would you answer that question?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I get that all the time too. And I get people fighting, no gold, no Bitcoin. And it's like, exactly. It's not one or the other. And so I told you, I spent the last 4 or 5 years writing a cryptocurrency research newsletter. And over that time, I put out 20 calls that went up over 1,000%. I put out a call that went up 25,000%. My best call went up over 100,000%. That's enough to turn $500 into $500,000.
Yeah.
The problem was my cryptocurrency research newsletter people were going broke because they were putting all their money in. And when they were taking profits, they were just buying more cryptocurrencies. They didn't understand to take money out and put it into gold or stocks or real estate. So they didn't understand asset allocation. And I said, it sounds so simple. It seems kind of stupid, but most people just go all in, as you're saying. So the reason why you don't want to go in, to answer your question, is because investing, like all of life, is about risk and reward.
Right.
And the potential reward is not worth the risk of losing everything. Ray Dalio, one of the best money managers in the world, he says we need to be prepared, we need to assume that we don't know what the future holds. Mm-hmm. We need to assume we don't know. And so even though I'm so confident in whatever, gold or real estate or Bitcoin, I don't know. There's black swan events like we're seeing right now today that can change everything. And so the potential reward of getting it right isn't worth the risk of losing it all. You always need to be able to start over.
Yeah, that's a great point. And one thing that I'd like you to expand on, if you can, and it's a question that I have for my own portfolio. And I think what's interesting, when we look at what stocks to buy or what assets, what rental properties, gold, Bitcoin, whatever, we think that all the work is done up front, deciding what to buy. And then once you buy it, then you're kind of good to go. But what I've found, especially on the speculative side of my portfolio, because if I buy something as an investment, it's just paying me to own it, I'll keep it forever. But on the speculative side, how do you know when to sell? How do you know at what point you want to buy? Like what's the indicator? Something, you said you had something go up 1,500% or 15,000% or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Okay, well, at 5,000%, you could have said, wow, I've had a pretty solid gain on this one. I'm going to go ahead and sell, but then you'd miss a lot of upside. I know the way I do it, but how do you do that?
Yeah, so a lot of it comes down to mindset, and I think I learned it back in the real estate days that, well, you when you enter a position, you need to already know what your exit is. So you're trying to like figure it out. So like, for example, an easy one would be if I bought Amazon in, 99, and then it crashed. Well, why did I buy Amazon? Did I believe there was a future where e-commerce was a big thing and I believed that Amazon was going to be a major player? If that's why I bought it, then I should hold it until that happens or until something changes that makes me think that's not going to happen again, right? Now, I also do a lot of speculation. I'm in Southern California, so I do like some pre-IPO stuff. Like I get in some of those deals. And on those, I'm like, okay, as soon as it doubles, I'm taking half my money off the table. Mm-hmm. So I'm buying it thinking that. So like some of these crypto positions, I'm like, look, this, I think I can make a quick 300-400% on this. As soon as it doubles, I'm taking half my money out. I'll let the rest ride and then I'll take it out. So I enter already knowing that. Something like Bitcoin though, for example, I do believe there's a good chance that it becomes a major asset class. Right. I do believe there's a good chance we could see it be worth $100,000. So for me, I don't want to sell Bitcoin. So what I've done with that is I've said, okay, like I want to own X amount forever, like to hand down to my kids. So I'm going to buy double that. And I'm going to sell some at 25,000. I'll sell some at 50,000, maybe some 100,000, and the rest I'm keeping. So like if you understand, I'm before I buy something, I'm already determining where my exit is, but always staying nimble and ready to change my mind if information changes.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And you're compartmentalizing your portfolio.
And that's
you're not buying everything for the exact same reason. I think so few people do that, but it's just absolutely crucial. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, and that's a perfect analogy. So you compartmentalize it. So you spread out your assets so you can swing for the fences, Babe Ruth style. But the strikeouts don't kill you, right? So, for example, what I might do on some of these small little crypto moonshots, I'll just put like a 1% in there,
and your whole portfolio,
or of that allocation, right? So it all depends on how much you want to risk. So we use allocations, position sizes to manage our risk, and then we use stop losses.
Right.
So on a cryptocurrency, say I don't want to risk more than 1% of that allocation, I might buy that and hold it with no stop loss because I've set my risk at the position size.
Yeah, right.
I know it's super volatile, right? So I want to just hold it with no thing. I use an analogy back to real estate that I think is very easy if people can understand this. So imagine that you heard 15 miles out of town, the city said in their development plan in 5 years, they're going to put this new stadium and all these new shopping centers out there, 15, 20 miles from town. And you heard that and you said, oh, I can go buy land out there super cheap right now. And when all that stuff is built, that land's going to be worth a bunch of money. So I go and I buy that land. And now I'm okay. I understand the plan. I understand why I bought it. And now I watch, are they getting the permits done? Is the funding coming along? Are the plans being drawn up? As long as all that work is continuing to move forward, then I hold. And even if the price of that land were to drop, I would still hold, maybe even buy more. Now, if as long as that project's on track, I hold. Now, if something changed and all of a sudden, oop, they found out that land's no good and the plan's off, okay, well, now I need to pivot really quickly and I need to get out of that land as soon as possible. And so that's kind of how I look at the investments. It's like, okay, what's my end goal? And then, you know, what's my contingency plan and my pivot plan?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you just do that real estate analogy you used, you just do that, whether it's a cryptocurrency, whether it's a stock, whether it's a bond, whatever you're looking at, you're kind of going at it with that same type of game plan.
Yeah. And like I said, you have to understand, and you made the point, each asset is owned for a different reason.
Yeah.
So the reason why I hold gold in my portfolio is way different than why I would hold silver, for example.
Yeah. Same here.
Right. Yeah. It's way different than why I would hold real estate. Right. So and I own different types of real estate for different reasons. Some is it like just cash cows and that just brings in money every month. And some of it, you know, it's a development and I'm expecting appreciation. So each thing has a little bit of different nuances. And I think what I would tell people watching is the first thing is you always have to understand, why am I buying this? How does it fit into my portfolio? And so when people ask you, I'm sure all the time on your videos, like they ask me all the time, what's the best whatever? What's the best asset to buy? What's the best stock? You know, and I'm like, I don't know what best is for you.
Right, right. Because you don't know why they're buying it.
Right.
Exactly right. Yeah. That's precisely what I tell people. And that's how I try to think through my own portfolio. And that's what I try to advise my friends and family members to do as well. So you've got a lot of experience with real estate. I just came out with a video yesterday. It was very popular, going over the current real estate market and is it going to crash? And if so, how long is it going to take? What's the Fed going to do to try to prop it up? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I have to admit, I haven't seen that video yet. I did see the video, but I haven't watched it yet. But so I have to admit, you know, after getting burned really bad in 2008, yeah, it changed my outlook. And then once I started peeling back the curtain to see how the financial system worked and realizing they just papered over the problem and didn't solve anything, I've been waiting for it to crash again.
Right.
And part of me wishes that I wouldn't have waited so long because I missed out on a lot of gains. But I learned that there's no such thing as good and bad timing, just good and bad strategies. So I've been in real estate, but I've changed my strategy, which I won't get into. But to answer your question, what do I think? I think that Japan is a perfect example of what we could be facing. And what's happened in Japan is basically the real estate market has cratered, most of it. Some of it has still continued to do really, really good. And so I think of it like if you had a countertop and you put a little water, the water would separate and break into little puddles. And so I think real estate will still have some hot spots.
Yeah.
So that will do good overall. I think it's going to do bad. I think that real estate has been the best investment for the last, whatever, 50, 60 years, but it will not be the best investment moving forward. Yeah. I think that real estate mostly will fall and probably never come back. And I talk about that because of demographics, if you're familiar with like Harry Dent's work.
Sure.
So I think what he says about demographics makes sense. The old people, the boomers, are selling the McMansions. You don't have enough young people moving up to buy the McMansions. And even if there were, they don't want them.
Yeah, right.
The way people look at real estate has changed, and people are more in a kind of this nomadic lifestyle. It's too expensive. They can't afford it, whatever. So I think we're going to see I don't think real estate will be the best investment in the world moving forward. I think as a cash flow investor, it could still be a good investment. Yeah. Not as an appreciation investor. But I think there's going to be pockets. I did a research report on this. I told you I write monthly research reports on the best areas to invest. And I think it was 2 or 3 months ago, I basically said, I think Florida real estate is going to be one of the best investments that you can get right now, at least for the next 15 years or so.
Right. So the retirees.
Both, right? So the retirees and the boomers. So you have the retirees that are living all across middle America. And for anybody who knows about real estate, everyone thinks Florida is overvalued. It's up about 75% off the bottom in 2009, so it's expensive. But people that think real estate in Florida is expensive don't really understand valuations. You're only comparing it to where it was 9 years ago. You need to compare it to where it is in the rest of the country. So if you're in Detroit or Minneapolis or Michigan, you know, whatever, like you could be in a $400,000 or $500,000 home paying 20-30% taxes, and you could move to Florida where it's sunshine 365 days a year. You can play golf and tennis every day, and you can buy a home for $130,000 with no income taxes.
Right.
So yes, it's expensive compared to itself 9 years ago, but compared to nationwide, especially when you take in the tax advantages and the weather advantages, it's extremely undervalued, in my opinion. Not Miami, not South Beach, but a lot of parts of there. And not just the baby boomers who are going to want that, but now because especially this the cerveza sickness that we're going through right now it is really going to shift the world more than anybody realizes. Yeah. Everybody is going to school and working from home right now. And I think people are going to go, why do I ever go back to the office? Right. So I think we're going to see this massive shift. And so people are going to be like, why the heck am I living under 5 feet of snow in Michigan when I could just live in Florida? So the retirees, yes, but also the boomers and the families that want to. I know in California, we also have a mass exodus to Texas.
Yeah.
So Texas is a big beneficiary. So Texas and Florida were my two picks. Because not just boomers, but everybody wanting to escape state taxes. And yeah, have better weather.
Up. Yeah, I mean, there's no way taxes are going down with what we're going through right now in the economy and going into 2021, 22, in my opinion. But I think it's really fascinating to get your take on that, because I'm really good buddies with another real estate guy. His name is Jason Hartman. He does the Creating Wealth show. And he's really big on linear markets, as am I. So that would mean just like a Kansas City. I've got a lot of rental properties in Kansas City that I purchased in 2012, and I've just kind of hung on to them. I've sold a few of them as of late, but I still own quite a few. And it's just about cash flow. And I had a conversation with him one time that was kind of funny, where we were talking about when you're buying one of these properties, you can't really look at it as though you're buying a house, because okay, fine. You buy a $100,000 house, the value goes down to $90,000, $80,000, or it goes up to $120,000. You're not selling it. It's just a paper gain or loss. It, really doesn't matter much as long as you have that $1,200 coming in every single month in rent. And so if you look at it, you're really buying debt in the form of a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. So you're buying super cheap debt and you're buying an income stream that, relatively speaking, is very cheap. And he said, you know, George, if I could just get the benefits of the cash flow and the debt without having to buy the real estate, he goes, that would be the perfect investment.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
that's right. That's exactly right. But it's just really interesting to get your take, his take, but you guys kind of
The risk on that, though, so I own a bunch of properties in the Midwest as well, and they've been, because they're cash cows, right? Because because you can make money. I can't buy rental properties in California where I live because they don't make any money.
Right.
But in the Midwest, they do. And in 2008, we saw the property in California and in Florida drop 60% in valuations, but the rents didn't. The rents held up, and actually more people had to rent because they lost their homes. So like you said, don't really worry about the valuation of the home. What's the cash flow? But so you have to be careful of that. What is the long-term outlook on that cash flow? So I think a lot of areas in the Midwest are going to lose people.
There you go. Okay.
Why would I continue to, like I said, why would I continue to live in this expensive house and have to deal with snow all year when jobs are gone and nobody's here and I can go live in Florida with no taxes and enjoy sunshine and be on the beach?
Right.
And so when I look, so from my own personal portfolio, before this whole thing happened, I would already told my wife, I want to start liquidating everything we had in the Midwest and start moving it down based off the research I'd put out a couple months ago. Because I'm trying to think where will the money be over the next 10, 20 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So how do you, assuming that you've had these properties for quite a while, how do you weigh the pros and cons of having to sell and realize the capital gains tax along with the depreciation opposed to the upside of moving it to a jurisdiction, which you think is a lot more positive in the next 10, 15 years?
Well, I think if you're going to just buy and sell a property, you can use the 1031 exchange rules, you know, hopefully.
So you already have a property set up, then you just go sell and just move it right over.
Well, you have a little bit of a buffer, you know, you have a buffer to exercise that. So that would be, you know, that would be one thing. As far as paying cap gains taxes, I mean, obviously you have to weigh that out. What is the tax that I owe? What's the upside on moving? What's the risk of staying? And each situation is going to be different, right? The one thing about cap gains taxes is that you just made the point that taxes are not going to go down.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times I think that maybe it's best to take the tax hit now instead of later, because later it's probably going to cost me more money.
Yeah, so, especially capital gains.
Yeah, capital gains is probably going to go up. They're going to try to eat that up, right? So you just have to look at that situation, and I think it just varies. But like I said, I think it depends, right? I mean, if you think that area that you're in has a chance of losing some population and your vacancies are going to go up or your rent prices are going to go down, you got to kind of take that into consideration.
Yeah, Detroit's the poster child for that. You get great RV ratio, but if you're losing population, you're losing renters, it's a no-go. So you touched on more people working at home because of what we're going through in the economy right now, and because of this issue, this illness, we'll call it, throughout the globe. So on a moving forward basis, where do you see opportunities? Because I know you've transitioned almost your entire business to online and YouTube, and you've done it extremely well. And I think you've only done it for about a year. So very new to the game, just like I am. And I think it's interesting in that first of all, the startup cost is so low. And I've started businesses, you've started a lot. And I don't know if you've had any brick and mortar businesses, but my goodness gracious, you got to throw $200,000-$300,000 at it before you even make a dollar, where to set up a webcam or something, your iPhone just started uploading to YouTube. So what advice would you have for people that are stuck at home right now and maybe looking for a side hustle or something to do online to subsidize their income or maybe transition their lifestyle into something with a lot more freedom?
Yeah. So I made the comment earlier that there's no such thing as good and bad timing. There's good and bad strategies. And so that applies to all areas of life. And that applies to our investing, right? There's a tremendous way to make money right now in investing. You just have to do it different. But also, as you said, with making money. And I think we are sitting on the biggest opportunity of our lifetime right now. And most people are completely oblivious to it. And so I have been trying to bring awareness to that. So as you just said, to start a brick and mortar business, you're looking at hundreds of thousands of dollars to do that, if not more, depending on the business. And today we're living in an age where a 13-year-old kid with a cell phone can make $1 million.
Right, right.
I mean, you have to just think about that. And so we've never had opportunity like this before. And so there's all different types of opportunity. But what we're going to realize right now, because everyone's forced to go to school and work online, is that if you don't have to be physically present, you can do it online. So if you're an accountant, you're an attorney, you're a graphic designer, a video editor, you teach people how to knit, you give tennis, I mean, anything can be done virtually. And so there's several opportunities. The biggest opportunity that I see, though, is in learning. And so the way that we're learning is changing. And I believe that universities are dead. They're dead men walking at this point. Absolutely. The way that we want to learn has changed. We want to learn specific information for what I want. So I'll go onto YouTube and how to run a Facebook ad. And I can just learn how to run Facebook ads. I don't need to learn all this marketing at a university that teaches me 10-year-old stuff. So the way that we're learning is different. And that's where this massive opportunity is. Into this online education space. And everybody is an expert. You may be really good at knitting and somebody wants to learn how to knit. You might be really good at gardening and somebody wants to learn how to garden. You might be really good at doing taxes. You might, whatever it is, somebody wants to learn what you have. And let's just say, for example, you can't think of anything that you're good at. Well, there's going to be all those people that are good at something that you can help. So you can help them do their video editing. You can help them do their graphic design. You can help them do their Facebook advertising. So there's going to be this massive opportunity. I believe it's like a $160 billion industry that's projected to grow like 10x in the next 5 years, right? The online education space. And I believe that's the biggest opportunity. I mean, think about just now today, everybody's locked up in their homes. And what are they doing? They're either watching TV or they're watching YouTube. So think about the mass amount of people that have just jumped in that are just waiting for your content. They're just waiting for your voice. They're waiting for something that you can teach them. And then once you have this audience, this platform, whether that's a YouTube channel, a podcast, an email list, or whatever, then the options to make money are endless. So now I have this audience and I can sell them products off of Amazon and make an affiliate commission. I can create my own products. I could come up with a digital course. People will sponsor me to talk about their products to my audience. The options are endless there. And this can go deeper and deeper and deeper, but hopefully that's enough just to open up people's minds, the tremendous opportunity.
And I also want to remind people that may be watching this and saying to themselves, oh yeah, well, I don't know that I know anything that anyone else would care about. But from what I've seen from the online marketer guys or gals that are really experts, the more you niche down, almost the better it is. Like, I know this one guy that I always watch all the time. His name is Miles Beckler. And he always uses an example of one of his friends. I think his wife has this very specialized horseback riding. I can't remember what it is. So she actually started doing exercise programs for people who are interested in this one type of horseback ride. So it's not even horseback riding.
Right.
It's exercises for people who are interested in this one little teeny little slice of the horseback riding world. I mean, I've also seen examples of like high school football coaches who start a YouTube channel or podcast where they start going over some of their strategies and plays on like how to build a better defense or, you know, whatever it is, whatever a football coach would be interested in. And they just grow this little audience in a community and they have a lot of fun with it. They enjoy it. They provide a lot of value. And if they can monetize it with YouTube ads or whatever, it's fantastic. It's a win-win for everyone. So I don't want anyone to think that this is beyond them from a technical standpoint or from an ability standpoint or a knowledge standpoint. And to, I think, Mark, the point you're making is even if you're not an, a super, super expert on something, with the resources that we have at our disposal right now, you can be an expert. Take 2 or 3 weeks and do a deep dive into the horseback riding and, yeah, and improve your knowledge. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Well, that or help someone who is. So you know how many experts there are on horseback riding but have no idea how to make videos or do ads or do any of that? Oh, so right. Like I could go find an expert in horseback riding and say, hey, let me help you with some videos and run some offers to an audience.
Yeah, exactly.
So like so, there's opportunities on both ends. I mean, there's just so much opportunity everywhere.
Yeah, you got it. And I'd like to remind everyone, in case you're new to my videos, I've never taken an econ class in my life. I've never taken a finance class in my life. I almost flunked out of high school. And the only way I know as much as I do, but whatever it is, whether it's the repo market, a lot of people watch my videos and say, my goodness, how can you understand all that complex stuff? It's from going online and just listening to podcasts obsessively since I retired in 2012, or it's listening to audiobooks, it's watching YouTube videos, or every occasionally I'll read a book, but I'm more of a audio guy or visual guy. So that's what I did to get the amount of knowledge that I have on these very esoteric things involving macro. So my point is if I can do it without any classes, any college, any PhD, almost flunking out of high school, you can do it too with whatever you're interested in. That's for sure.
And I did, I did the same thing. I mean, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I got out of high school and immediately went and bought a zero down home and fixed it up with my own hands and flipped it. And I never went to college. I never took any courses. After I had made millions of dollars, I think I had over 100 rental units. My wife was getting her real estate license. She convinced me to do this property management course with her. She was on her coursework. So I did. And I never took the test. And the teacher's like, hey, do you want to make up the test? I'm like, nah. Like, I'm just here to learn. But anyway, I've never done any school. And we have something called Google. You want to know what the repo market is? Type it into Google.
Right. Exactly. Or just watch one of my YouTube videos.
Yeah, watch your YouTube. That's where I learn everything.
Yeah. So you've got a great saying. I think it's actually from Conor McGregor, or at least his coach, maybe. And that's that we either win or we learn. And that's where I heard it first, at least. And I think that's such a cool saying, because whether you're doing business, whether you're doing real estate, whether you're trying to start a side hustle, you're probably going to fail a couple times. And it's just, you throw a bunch of things up against a wall, you see what sticks. And just so everyone knows, when I first started this YouTube channel, I was talking about real estate investing because I thought nobody in their right mind would ever want to watch a video on macro. Who wants to watch this boring stuff? Yeah. And sure enough, when I did that, of course, that's what everyone was interested in, which is great because that's what I like talking about. But can you expand on that a little bit more? I mean, it's a really cool kind of one-liner, but I think it's got so much more, such a profound influence if people really understand what it means.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what it means with another quote, and that is smooth seas never made a skilled sailor.
Right.
So success is a horrible teacher. We only learn from our failures. And so most people are so afraid to fail, but that's how we learn. So think about it like an artificial intelligence, like an AI, and they just keep trying, and they fail. Finally, it works. And then on to the next problem. And it's like, on to the next problem. Fail, solve. On to the next problem. Fail. And so the faster we can fail, the faster we can get along, because we have to try all these things that don't work. Now, investing is somewhat the same way, which is why you never go all in. You need to make sure you have that safety net. But yeah, you need to just keep trying things to see what learns. Don't be afraid of failure. Take the time to understand it. And that's what I had to do in 2008. I wanted to not look at my failure because it was very painful for me. It was very expensive. And I wanted to just move on past that. But I had to dig in and I had to understand it so I could learn from that. And so, don't be afraid to fail. Just trying to keep learning. I would say, though, about that quote is that you want to learn from your failures, but you want your failures to be teaching you something where you want to go. So what I mean by that is, let's say that I want to have this life where in a year from now I can make $100,000 a year off of YouTube.
Okay.
Let's say I want that. And let's say that I'm trying different ads and I'm trying different video formats and different stuff and they fail, but that's okay because I'm getting closer and closer to my goal. But let's say that I go over and I try to do a different job. I don't know, go work with an auto mechanic and I fail at that. Well, that failure didn't help me get to the goal that I was trying to get to.
Right.
So understand where you're trying to go, and then all the failures that are getting you there are okay. Other failures that aren't teaching you anything you need to learn, that's just a waste of your time.
Yeah. So it's like a targeted failure, kind of.
Targeted failure, yeah. Exactly.
And now you were telling me before we started recording about, I think, a video series you did on mindset. So I think this is a perfect transition into that. Could you share with the audience some of the key things that you go over in that?
Yeah. So a couple weeks ago, I did a 3 days of live training on to my audience. I think it was about 2 or 3 hours a day for 3 days. And I called it the high performance investor. And it was all the things that a high performance investor would do. And the first module started with mindset. And a lot of people, and then it went all the way to like the highest level strategy that I know. I paid $30,000 to a financial strategist to learn this strategy, and I taught it for free. And while everybody just wanted that strategy because it cost me so much money to get it and it's so powerful, I started with the mindset. Because you have to start with the mindset. It's like if Tiger Woods gave you his golf clubs, you're not just going to go play as good as Tiger Woods. You have to build the foundation. So we talked about the mindset. And as human beings, we make horrible investors. We're the worst.
We're
driven by two primal factors, right? Where we want to rush towards pleasure and we want to run away from pain. That's it. That's human. So when prices are going up, 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 I want to buy. I want to buy. I want to buy at the top of the bubble.
Right.
And when prices start going down, 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 we want to sell and run away because it's painful. That's the exact opposite that you need to be doing as an investor. So we talked about those different types of mindset. We talked about understanding our psychological traps like normalcy bias, things like that, that keep us from seeing opportunities. We talked about ways to spot, patterns in your thinking that could hold you up. So we talked a lot about mindset. Then we went into like actions, like things that you should be doing to be successful. And then I went into stuff like how to have more energy. A lot of people, they come home from work and they're too tired and they don't want to read. They're tired. I just want to turn on Netflix. So if you can learn to manage your energy, and if you can learn to manage your focus, a lot of people don't have the focus. And so they're trying to read, but they can't grasp the information. And focus is a superpower. So if you can get more energy and more focus, you can learn so much faster. So we started there. And then over the course of 3 days, we went into, like I said, these high level strategies. And I do have, the whole 3 days, I'm putting it together as a course that I'm going to sell.
Okay.
But what I did is I put it together in 4 highlight videos. So they're replay videos that are just the highlights. And I do have it up for free and anybody can go watch those. And
hey, where's that?
If you want a link to it, I don't know the link off the top of my head. But if you want to link to it, we can. But so I put 4 videos that are highlights together and yeah, you can access it for free.
Okay. Yeah. So just for the viewers, I'll put that in the description below. So I want to ask you a question, kind of a selfish question. I've never owned Bitcoin other than when I had a interview with Alex Saunders the other day from Nuggets News. He sent me some Satoshis. He just had me take my phone and like put it up to the webcam like that.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, turn it around. I went, man, it's like, boom, there the Satoshis are right on my phone. I said, well, that's the coolest thing. Because he had me download the app just right there when I was doing the interview with him. It's Satoshi's wallet, something like that. But just for those who are very, very beginning, just like I kind of understand Bitcoin. I get it. For me, I consider it a speculation. And I think it's got incredible asymmetry. But if you're someone who's never bought a Bitcoin in your life, but you're a little worried about maybe counterparty risk, like a Coinbase. Can you explain first and foremost, should we be worried about that counterparty risk? And if we are, what's the best way to buy Bitcoin with as little counterparty risk as possible?
Well, thanks for serving up that softball, because I love talking about Bitcoin. and shout out to Alex. I love Alex too. He's a really good guy. But yeah, I love talking about Bitcoin. I do believe it's probably our best investment opportunity that we have today. I'm still not 100% into it. Anthony Pompliano says he's 50% into it, which I think is still crazy. I'm not anywhere that big into it, but I do believe in it with everything, and I think it's the best opportunity that we have. That being said, it's very difficult to understand, because you really have to discipline. You have to master about 6 or 8 disciplines: economics, monetary policy, philosophy, game theory, technology. So you kind of have to understand all these things. And each person will have their own entrance path into it. A couple things I can tell you is that it's a lot of things. People say it's like money. So anytime we hear of a new technology, we try to come up with an analogy to try to understand it better. But when you apply that to a technology, you box it in and make it too small. So when the internet came out in 1997, we said, oh, we can send electronic messages. Well, we could in 1997, and that's the only use case was we had chat and we had email. We didn't know today our cars would be hooked to something called a cloud, using something called voice navigation and social media to navigate us around traffic. We didn't know that, because we didn't have any of those building blocks. And so when we say technology is kind of like electronic messaging, it makes it too small. So just to call Bitcoin like digital money is way too small. It's a lot of different things. One thing that we do know it is for sure is that we do know that every computer network is being hacked today. Target's hacked, Experience hacked, the CIA was hacked, even the NSA, National Security Association, was hacked. And when they hacked the NSA, they stole their hacking software. All these ransomware attacks that you hear about happening are because they stole the NSA software, right? So every network has been hacked. Even the most secure computer networks in the world have been hacked, with the best security teams guarding them, and they've been hacked. Bitcoin is an open source network, meaning there's no company, there's no president, there's no team, there's nobody guarding it. It's completely open source. Everybody can see the code. Everybody has access to program on the code. And there's over $100 billion sitting there in the open for everybody. And it's never been hacked.
Right.
So we do know that it is the most secure computer network in the history of the world. And that is a brand new technology that is revolutionary. And we do know that other things as well. So, and again, I'll try not to go off the deep end, but to answer your question about buying it and counterparty risk, everything in life has risk, and you always need to know what those risks are. You have your money in the bank, there's massive risk. Legally, that money in the bank is not yours. They IOU it to you. The stocks in your brokerage account legally are not yours. They're owed to you. And that's very important if you understand the legal differences there. With Bitcoin, it allows you to hold it yourself, kind of like taking possession of physical gold. So like physical gold, I can put it in my own safe and I control it. If I own it in an ETF, or even if it's in someone else's vault, there's counterparty risk that they could default on me. So with Bitcoin, I can take delivery of it in my own wallet, just like you did with Alex. And now there's no counterparty risk, but there is risk that you get hacked. There is risk that you forget your wallet. There is risk that you forget your backup. So now you have the risk as opposed to counterparty risk. Mm-hmm. Whereas I could use a company like Coinbase, and they probably have the best security out there. So I don't really have to worry about them getting hacked, and they have insurance if they do. But if I travel to Cuba and I log in from an IP in Cuba, they will freeze my account and I have to go through the treasury to get my account turned back on.
Oh, okay.
So you know what I mean? So you have to understand what these risks are. I'd love to say it's black and white. I believe that Bitcoin is revolutionary. I was led to it. There's a newsletter, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, called Sovereign Man.
Oh, I love Simon Black. Yeah.
Simon Black.
Oh, man. Well, I retired in 2012 and I started going down the rabbit hole. I mean, it was all about Jim Rogers, Mark Faber, Jim Grant, Peter Schiff, Simon Black. He's definitely one of my favorites.
So Simon Black really led me to Bitcoin, because not he doesn't really talk about Bitcoin, which I'm really surprised, but he's all about planting your sovereign flag. Why would you have all your money in one country? Why not have passports and visas in multiple countries with multiple bank accounts, right? So I was in the process of using one of his contacts to set up a corporation and bank account in Panama.
Okay.
And that all of a sudden I took another look at Bitcoin. I said, that's the exact same thing. I can get my money out of the banking system and put it into Bitcoin.
Right.
And so by me taking possession of my Bitcoin and holding it myself, I have my sovereign flag. No country, no government, nobody can take it, steal it, seize it, manipulate it from me. I have control over it. Yes, I need to be a little bit responsible and secure it. And that's pretty easy to do.
Right. So if you were going to buy it, you'd buy it through Coinbase and then you just download it to a thumb drive. So then you held it and you were in control of it.
Yeah, it depends on where you live. So depending on where you live, where you're at in the world, you know, you might want to buy it from different places. If you're in the United States, Coinbase is a really easy way to do that. They're, you know, maybe charge you a little bit more to do that, et cetera. Another one that really gained in popularity is Cash App. The Cash App, you can buy it directly from there. And you can buy it and you can store it there, but they're not banks. But the easiest thing is to download it to your own wallet. Like you said, it's okay. Not really a thumb drive, but it's like a wallet. And basically, because it's digital, you're never downloading it. What you're doing is you have a private key that allows you to access it. So think of it like a virtual locker room.
Right.
And your assets are in this virtual locker and you have the code to access that locker.
And that's what's on your thumb drive, right?
That's what's on your thumb drive. That's what's on your phone. When you downloaded it to your phone, what you downloaded was a key to that digital locker. You don't actually have the coins on your phone. Nobody ever does.
Got it. Okay. So now that you mentioned Sovereign Man, I want to be cognizant of your time here. So I'll just ask you a couple more questions here if you don't mind.
I got time as long as your audience doesn't hang up on us.
No. This is all really great stuff. So going back to what we were talking about, people working at home, the opportunity there, how do you combine that or how do you see that in a world where we could potentially have this geo arbitrage? And what I mean by that is, like me right now, I'm talking to you from Medellin, Colombia. I actually have my residency in Puerto Rico, where Simon does, and so does Peter Schiff. I went there in the end of 2013 or so. And when I was doing that, by the way, everyone that I was there with going through the process of getting your driver's license, like 99% of them were from California.
Yeah.
I remember that very well. But my point is that, do you see an opportunity for someone to kind of establish a little business or a side hustle online and then maybe take that $2,000 or $3,000 a month and move to a jurisdiction outside of the United States? I know this isn't right for everybody, but especially a young person, to where they can live for $500 or $1,000 a month very, very well, mind you, and take the additional $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 that they're making from their side hustle, reinvest it back into the business and grow from there. What do you think about that?
Yeah, 100%. So I already mentioned how a lot of these millennials may want to move to Florida just because, one, the weather, but two, no income taxes. So I'm in California. I get to pay an extra almost 14% a year just for living in the Sunshine State. Jeez. Well, maybe the Florida's Sunshine State, whatever. But anyway, so I'm paying a lot. I'm probably going to file my Puerto Rico paperwork by the end of this year because I think they're going to change that, and I'm trying to get grandfathered into that.
Cool.
If I didn't have a couple kids, I would have been there a couple years ago. Yeah. It's how much do I want to pay for my kids to grow up where, whatever. But anyway, I do believe that this new opportunity with being able to make money online gives you the opportunity to geo arbitrage, as you call it, live wherever you want for cheaper, and move to Florida where you pay no income taxes, or move to another country, as you said. Being in Puerto Rico is the best opportunity because depends on where you're at in the world, but in the U.S., because we're U.S. citizens, we get the benefit or the we're able to now pay federal income taxes for the rest of our life, no matter where we live.
Right.
So
right.
Even if I go live in Colombia with you, I'm still paying federal income taxes.
Right. Yeah.
So I might as well just live in Florida.
Yeah.
Right. Except for the cost of living is less.
Yeah, it's a fraction.
But Florida has the tax incentives, which we won't go down that whole rabbit hole. But there's massive tax incentives, so go look that up on your own. But yeah, definitely living anywhere in the world, and you can live across the world for pennies. Like you said, $500, $1,000, you could live like a king. And so if I didn't have older kids that were kind of in their prime, I probably would already have been gone.
Yeah. But to your point there, I want to make sure everyone's clear. Puerto Rico, because of its association with the United States, is the only place in the entire world, literally, I'm not exaggerating, the entire world, where U.S. citizens do not have to pay U.S. taxes. they pay it to the Puerto Rican government. Before, it really wasn't a big deal because the tax rates were pretty much identical. But now that they've gone through this horrible economic slump, a bankruptcy, and going back to, I think, 2012, they came up with something called Act 20 and Act 22. That's what Mark is referring to. That's why Peter Schiff moved there. That's why I moved my residency there back in 2013. That's why Simon Black is there. And Mike Maloney, I think, is there, and a lot of these hedge fund guys. So anyway, Google that, check it out. One last question for you, Mark. What do you think about the U.S. banning cash and potentially moving to a digital currency, a government-backed digital currency? How do you see that playing out? And do you think that affects Bitcoin positively or negatively?
So governments have been trying to ban cash for a long time. We've seen it all over the world, including the U.S. They obviously removed big bills, 500s and whatever, thousands a long time ago. There's been legislators trying to remove the $100 bill for a while. So they've been moving to that. We won't go into all those reasons why. But in this new stimulus bill, they were trying to put in the digital dollar into that. In addition, Mnuchin, the Secretary of Treasury, he just hired like one of the key guys from Coinbase.
Yeah, I saw that.
So, I mean, you have it in the bill. They've hired the guys. I mean, we know it's coming. It's only a matter of when, not if. And it's looking like it's probably going to be coming sooner than later. We're going to have that. I believe all the countries will have that. You know, China's been working on that for a while now. Lots of countries are working on that. So it's coming, and it's coming fast. Now, how does that affect Bitcoin? I want to believe that it will ultimately benefit Bitcoin. And the reason why is that a lot of people have this thing about digital money, which 90% of our transactions are all digital anyway, but people still feel digital money is stupid or dumb or it's whatever, right? So once it goes mainstream, it brings adoption. Everyone's going to be, oh no, digital money, of course, right? And for the first time, you're going to be able to compare it to Bitcoin. So when you see the price of the dollar going down and Bitcoin going up, a lot of people are going to be asking questions about that. We have an inflationary dollar, so it's losing value. Bitcoin is deflationary, so it's gaining value, and that's going to attract a lot of eyeballs. So I believe it's going to be a massive win for Bitcoin. Okay. Now, we have to, like Dalio says, we have to assume that we don't know what the future holds. We do know, and you understand the financial system, that the powers that be, the banksters, whoever you want to call them, they don't want you to have a life raft. They don't want you to have an alternative to the financial system. They want all your money in the system because that's the way they can bail in the banks and they can do all their things. They can't allow you out of the financial system, which is why they want the digital money. So having Bitcoin as a life raft, they're not going to like that. So what are they going to do to prevent that from happening? I don't believe that they'll ultimately win and be able to defeat it. But that's something to keep an eye out for. That's the kind of concern I have. So anyway, in the short term, I believe it's going to be a big win for Bitcoin. Everyone's going to see digital money legitimizes it, and they're going to see in real time the difference. Why aren't these exchanges, this one going down, this one's going up? They'll go to Bitcoin. So that answers your question.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's my concern as well, is that the government sees it as a competing currency. It takes power away from them. And the whole reason they moved to a digital government-backed currency is to get more power and more control over the way you spend your money, where it goes, et cetera. So,
but yeah, the thing ahead. Is, though, and you've talked about this a lot, and I've done dozens of videos about it too, like the end of the dollar. And the dollar's reign is not going to be there forever. And as a matter of fact, it's losing ground really quickly. And so if you think about it, we've had Brad Sherman from California. He got on and said, we need to stop Bitcoin because it undermines the dollar's power and undermines our ability to do sanctions on nations like Iran. He called them out by name. It takes away our ability to do sanctions on countries like Iran. Well, Iran's sitting there going, oh, really? Well, shoot, I kind of like Bitcoin now. So I said to understand Bitcoin, you have to know a lot of different things, and one of them is game theory. And so when you have countries adopting Bitcoin, Germany now is super pro-Bitcoin, Iran, like all these countries are adopting Bitcoin to get out of the dollar. So the U.S. can say, hey, the U.S. has already kicked so many people out of the party, the U.S. is like the only one left at the party, kind of, right? So you see Russia and Europe starting their own financial systems already. So all these countries are starting to adopt Bitcoin to get out of the dollar. And the U.S. can say, hey, Bitcoin's illegal. But that just means Bitcoin will live in that free part of the world.
Right. Right. Yeah, it'll be interesting. That's a great counter-argument. I'm glad you brought that up. It'll really be fascinating to see how it all plays out. The one thing I do know for sure is things are moving very, very quickly. And it's like that old saying that decades go by with nothing happening and weeks go by with decades happening. And I think we're in the decades happening time frame right here. So, Mark, for any of the viewers who want to find out more about what you do, I'm going to link to that free mindset series you have. When you shoot me that, it'll be in the description. But where can they go to find out more about you?
Yeah, I just put out videos every week on YouTube. So Mark Moss on YouTube. I'm really active on Twitter. It's the number one Mark Moss. So those are the best ways to find me. Follow me on YouTube and Twitter.
All right, buddy. I appreciate your time. I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, always fun.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.